What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Duke. Back and better than ever. It is Wednesday, July 8th, and this is the Talking Soccer Podcast, episode 71. Really, really exciting and interesting guest. Alex Baker will join us here in just a little bit. You guys know him better as Osimo, the number one daily fantasy player in the world. As always, we are brought to you by EliteFantasy.com and EliteSportsBetting.com. That's where you can find all of your daily fantasy and betting needs. And look, we spend probably 45 minutes together here, so I'm not going to keep you guys too long on the intro, but number one daily fantasy player in the world, you guys are probably going to want to listen to this interview and pick up some good tips and tricks. A lot of what Alex talks about is math and having a process and automating your process in order to have success over multiple sports, but a lot of logic is involved as well. He's a super smart guy, super funny guy. So hopefully you guys enjoy the interview. We'll be back next week with more of our typical breakdown, a big week of EPL action here for the rest of July 8th week and then into the weekend and into next week. As always, appreciate you guys listening. Enjoy Alex Baker. You know him as Osimo. All right, guys, this man needs no introduction, but where's the fun in that? He's the number one DFS player in the world. And frankly, it's not even close. He's Mike Tyson. He's Roger Federer. He's Tiger mother freaking Woods. Roto Grinders has you with nearly 30% more points than the third best player in the world, Chipotle Attic. You've lapped the field in daily fantasy, and I'm very happy to have you on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Baker, you probably know him better as Osimo.
Thanks, man. Looking forward to talking about some soccer because it's kind of the new game in my repertoire here, so I'm having a lot of fun trying to figure it out.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about your foray into the soccer world. I think speaking on behalf of the soccer industry here, we're happy to have you. Also, really looking forward to like NFL and MLB coming back to hopefully take up your time so we can all win some of these contests here as well. But I mentioned off the top, you're the best player in the world, and I'm going to talk about this because I know you're too humble to do it. Some of these numbers are absolutely laughable, man. Number one in the world, number one in the super heavyweight, number three NFL, number two NBA, number nine NHL, number one PGA, number one esports, number seven NASCAR, number 10 NASCAR, number seven MMA. You've just jumped into the soccer world, already at the number six, but here's my real question. What's going wrong with your model in MLB? 173 in the world, Alex.
Yeah, it's tough to play, man. It's at 4:30 in the morning these days because they got the Korean baseball and stuff. So hopefully once the real thing comes back, I'll be able to compete.
Well, in all seriousness, we know not everyone has their rankings on. Roto Grinders, you know, submits their results. But, I mean, you're second out of 30,000 NBA players. You're first out of 15,000 PGA players. Third out. How do you manage to do all this? Obviously, I'm guessing it's heavily math-based. How do you have the time to play all these sports and not only play but do well?
Yeah, I mean, I've been – fortunate to have a few years in the industry, so I've had periods of time to kind of like focus on each individual sport and kind of improve my game. So I think that the trick really is for me kind of coming up with a process that's repeatable and not overly time consuming so that I can spend 30 minutes to an hour kind of putting some lineups together and playing.
Is that typically your process? You know, like I know in soccer specifically, I spend hours putting together an article and then 60 minutes before kickoff, you can just tear it up because there's all these changes in the lineups. Don't necessarily have that for NFL, although we have start sit issues there, you know, in the morning. Typically 30 to 60 minutes. Is that about what you spend tweaking your lineups and getting ready for a slate?
It depends on the sport. So, I mean, with soccer, you only have 60 minutes at best. So as you're saying, you can't really plan too far ahead. That's definitely something that I think a savvy player can take advantage of because people are playing people that aren't starting and not late swapping to get the right starters and stuff. So there's a lot of advantage to be gained in that. But you do have to be pretty quick to the punch.
Well, I know I wanted to have you on the podcast for a number of reasons. Thanks for being on today. But number one, you have taken down multiple big field GPPs in soccer. So certainly want to get your input on that. Number two, I wanted to compliment you and how Osimo.com did with handling the transition from a regular sports schedule into this dead period with COVID. You presented a lot of content for free. In fact, I know for esports, for a couple weeks at least, I was using your free projections as part of my process for esports. I was actually talking to Jeff Collins about it, how you guys handled it on social and everything. So I think you guys did a great job there. But number three, and probably most importantly, I think you're one of the best follows on Twitter, man. I want to talk about your Twitter game a little bit. And, you know, I think you've managed to, and maybe it's because you are the best player in the world and you probably have, you know, so much money that you don't know what to do with it, man. But you don't take yourself too seriously. You have a really good time with it. I think you provide value for your followers. So I want to commend you on a couple of things like that. But let's start with number one, the soccer stuff there. Your venture into the soccer field. What led you into this? Was it just the other sports kind of having a downtime and this being one of the first sports to come back with COVID going on? Or have you always had an interest and just had some free time? What led you into the soccer world?
Yeah, I think with not very many sports coming on, coming back, and Bundesliga was really one of the first big leagues to come back, I was seeing a lot of potential in soccer DFS to kind of grow to a state beyond where it had been. And we saw that there have been some really big soccer GPPs and stuff. So that was kind of the motivation, is just seeing the potential in the market and seeing that as an important piece of DFS with a lot of the sports on hold.
So what exactly drew you in? Was it the larger fields like you're talking about and the prize pool increasing and the top, you know, kind of top heavy weighted structure of the contest? Did you think there could potentially be a skill gap there that you could exploit? What exactly brought you in?
Yeah, it's funny because soccer is the one sport I've been seeing in the lobby for a long time and never jumped on. And one of the reasons is the timing, because it's like pretty early in the day because a lot of the big contests are in Europe. So I was hesitant to really dedicate myself when a lot of the big GPPs started before I would wake up. So that was really the sticking point before, but now I don't go out and party and get drunk, so it's a lot easier to get up early in the morning because all the bars are closed.
You know, I had a baby, and that's why I'm always up, but the bars being closed has opened up a window here for you. And so have you watched much soccer before? Have you watched more since you started playing? What's kind of your background with the soccer world?
I've always kind of enjoyed watching World Cup and Olympic soccer, but from just the normal leagues, I wouldn't normally tune in to like EPL or MLS or anything like that. But I feel like it's important to watch the sport and kind of learn the mechanics as you're building a model. So I watched a lot of the Bundesliga matches kind of the first couple of weeks I came back and try to learn as much as I can from that. But it turned out I'm not a very good talent scout in soccer, so I'm not sure how much it helped.
So how much of your process then, you know, you talked about building your own model, Alex. You know, for me personally, I grew up playing this game. This is the game I don't play exclusively. You know, I play almost all the major sports here in DFS, but this is the heaviest volume that I'm playing. I'm, you know, obviously there's a statistical base to it, but I'm trying to use my real world experience and my history in the game to find little edges there. You know, if someone who's new to the sport or has never really played soccer DFS, what's kind of a good place for them to start as far as, you know, as you've grown into this sport here, where have you started and looked for little edges here to exploit?
Honestly, I have the most experience with just looking at the data from different sports and kind of figuring out what are the key factors to target. And, you know, I try to focus a lot on game theory and lineup construction. So kind of digging beyond just like how many points is the guy going to score and trying to figure out, should I be stacking? Should I, you know, one of my favorite formats in soccer is the showdown, because I feel like there's so many more correlations within a game than within like a set of several games. It's like, do you take the goalkeeper and play for like a shutout, or do you play for both sides to score? And there's like just so many ways you can approach it, and I have a lot of fun trying to figure out that puzzle.
Well, you know, I was watching one of your shows over on your YouTube page, and you were actually talking about the goalkeeper in showdown and how important that is. I thought you had a really interesting take that made complete sense to me. I mean, we've included it in our work over at Elite, but I hadn't put it into words quite like you did as far as exposing the potential clean sheet value and the ownership value. You know, if you want to talk about that and kind of how you put that in your process.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the goalies don't really project to score a ton of points usually, because a lot of it is based on the small probability of a clean sheet and the win when I mean a lot of games. The favorite will be under 40% to get a win because the draw is kind of a decently likely outcome. So the thing is, there's so much variance. And did they get the win? Did they get that bonus 10 for the clean sheet and win? And then when you compare them to other guys with a similar projection, those guys don't really have nearly as high variance because they're just racking up a lot of like a lot of points in small increments, not that 5 to 10 points. So that really helps you get that guy that has a score above 10 that you really need in showdown to have a winning lineup.
Now, are you looking to target goalkeepers in a particular game script, Alex? You know, like, for example, Man City today versus Newcastle. They were -2.5 favorites, -120 juice on them to cover a 2.5 goal spread. So clearly, we're thinking it's going to be heavily in Man City's favor. The game ends 5-0. In a situation like that, where we're going to have, let's say, a game with 3-plus goals, likely, are you still targeting goalkeepers in a situation like that? Or are you looking more to capture the high end, the upside there of some of those field players?
I think it depends a little bit whether we're talking showdown or regular, because in regular, like, everyone has to pick a goalie. So there's not a tremendous advantage in picking like one goalie over another, because pretty much the saves and goals allowed kind of cancel each other out. And teams like Man City, they don't allow a lot of shots. So it's hard for them to like get an outlier score other than that 10-point bonus. But in classic, I don't feel like it's that fun a decision. You just pick a goalie, whatever fits, but in showdown.
Super tilting, right? Super tilting.
Yeah, because it's like the other goalie, it was like one zip and he got way more points, right? So this is how the ball rolls.
Well, I know you were talking about the Bundesliga earlier, Alex, and one particular goalie, I believe it's for Freiburg, Schwinn. Constantly underdogs, constantly towards the bottom of the price list, constantly getting, because of the way they play, 5 to 8 shots or saves, I should say, probably upwards of 10 shots against, giving up a couple goals, but still getting in that double digit range. So I think from the classic standpoint, I know at least for our guys that we look for, we're rarely playing high priced goalkeepers in cash and looking towards that lower end to try to find some value there. But, you know, hey, like our buddy Blunderhead says, play whoever you want, right? Just build a lineup and plug in whoever else is in there. So you're relatively well known for your max entry stuff, Alex, and a lot of our guys are trying to get into that now. I think a lot of the different sites have done a good job with creating these smaller MME opportunities, you know, 25-cent games, things like that, for someone who doesn't quite have the bankroll to max enter. As far as your play, let's take a normal slate. Let's just say an NBA slate. How much is GPP versus catch? Are you playing single entry? Are you playing strictly multi-entry? What kind of is your breakdown for your play?
I pretty much only play the GPPs. Cash, it requires a lot of micromanagement to be successful, so I don't focus a ton on that. But in sports like soccer, where the GPPs aren't as big, like, you can really scale up your volume a lot more in cash, so it's a little bit different. But mostly GPP, I just enjoy the strategy a lot more and not trying to seek out the weakest players and sit in their games or whatever, which is how you win at cash.
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting point you make there, because we're constantly in the chat room, you know, for the 60 minutes, basically, right? Tweaking and changing things out. And, you know, Wednesday it was Jared Bowen versus Gabriel Jesus, and who are we going to play here, and do we get Mahrez in? And it's constant tiny decisions that we're going to make because we only have so many spots versus a large field GPP where we're just tweaking exposures, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, having a system to kind of be able to take a lot of lineups that you generate using Optimizer, I mean, I use Fantasy Cruncher, and kind of evaluate how good they are, that's the key to MME, because to me, hand building one lineup that's good is a lot easier, because you can really dive down deep into each player and kind of figure out, like, does this game script make sense? But it's not really possible to do that over 150 lineups. So just having some sort of system in place. I mean, I think in soccer, it's interesting because there's only two players that can score points at a given time, like for the shot plus assist. So I think like just pairing guys that pass a lot, the guys that shoot a lot is like important. So you can get that correlation. But it's like once you go beyond the two player stack, it kind of drops off in values. So it's interesting because like you can't really set the stacking settings very easily to find these lineups. But like having that correlation does seem like it's pretty important.
And then as far as your exposure, let's say you're making, I'm not a big MME player. And I've started to get into it more. Brian Healy's got me into it a little bit more here lately. Exposure wise, what's on a slate? Like, let's just take Wednesday slate. Did you play today, Alex? I don't even know if you played.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So we had three games. Man City was a monster favorite. West Ham was a moderate favorite. I think they're -115 or so. And then we had a Sheffield Wolves game, which just screamed under and was 0-0 until the 93rd minute. You know, what's the highest exposure you had to a player today in your MME build?
Let me take a look here, because honestly, like, I don't worry too much about it. But I might have to here we go. Okay, so Manchester City was such a big favorite and ended up being the highest scorers too. I had like 60% of De Bruyne. 46% Jesus, Mahrez 44%. So it's like, I don't think I took a very big stand on those guys, but they're just so good that a lot of the time they're going to be required to win the slate. So I was trying to kind of establish my advantage in the other lineup spots, I suppose.
And how about a guy like David Silva? You know, he obviously was the slate breaker today. He was, I think, 7,400 or something on DraftKings, a player who typically plays 60 to 65 minutes, ended up going the full 90, I want to believe, today. Had a goal, a couple assists. I mean, he was unbelievable today. I think I was underexposed to him. Do you have much D Silva?
I had him at 23%, so.
Which I think was slightly over, I think he came in around 10, 17%, oh, yeah, something like that.
12%, yeah. So yep. He was pretty low owned. I mean, he's a guy that shoots a decent amount, like more than two shots a game. And he also gets a lot of assists on shots. So that's the kind of guy that is going to have a ton of variance because it matters so much whether those go in. And that's the perfect kind of GPP play. Where a guy like De Bruyne, I mean, he scores so many points from crosses that he can get a good score without scoring. But I don't think that's true for Silva.
Yeah, that's exactly why cash versus GPP, right? And you focus mostly on GPP. I think that totally makes sense. And we talked, you know, a little bit about ownership here. This is the question I get every single day. And I think you had a funny quote in the video I was watching the other day. The easiest way to figure out ownership is to start building lineups in soccer. Is it as simple as that, Alex? Is your process different in soccer versus other sports as far as determining ownership? How do you go about doing that?
I haven't really dedicated a lot of time to figuring out the soccer ownership yet. That's something that I'll work on in the future. But in general, I think people aren't very hesitant to tell you who they're on. I mean, just log on any website that talks about DFS, and that starts to give you a sense. Then when you start building lineups, it's like who fits together and stuff. So, I think that it's pretty easy to know who's going to be high owned just because, like, these days everyone is pretty good at identifying the best plays. And when you operate from that kind of basis, then you're just going to – if you're building lineups, you're going to end up on the same people as everyone else pretty much. So that is how I approach it.
And – you know, for the number one player in the world, how important is ownership? Let's just talk about soccer here. I know it probably varies from sport to sport here. And obviously any piece of information you can glean is another tool in the shed there. But, you know, you've taken down several GPPs, large field GPPs, and you're even saying you haven't really nailed down ownership yet and you haven't really taken the time to do so. How important is it?
I think it's really important because not necessarily on an individual player basis, like, when you have a chalk guy that's high owned, that's really good, like you can fade him, but that's not really going to win or lose you money. It's more about the overall lineup where you want a couple of guys that are low owned to be your differentiating factor. And then you want to stack it with a lot of the like best plays of the slate too. So that's kind of my, uh, my general recommendation to newer players is have a couple sleepers and a couple studs, or mostly studs. So that's kind of how I approach soccer too.
You know, we joke around about the Ricky Bobby quote, if you ain't first, you're last. And GPP, especially in these larger field GPPs, it's important that you get near the top in order to become profitable long-term. We're not seriously saying go first or last, but we do need to take some chances in GPP. So for soccer specifically, you know, what's been the key to you kind of taking down, you know, a couple of these? I don't know if you want to have a lineup in mind that you took one down with. Probably not, because you play so many damn games here, Alex. But, you know, what's been kind of the one key?
I've had a lot more success in the showdown so far. And I always notice that when the game ends, I'm never in first. I always like need those bonus points to slide in there. So I guess just stacking up those defenders and goalie, that's been one strategy that's really worked out for me, because that is one of the more reliable sources of a correlation in soccer.
Well, one of the things I want to talk about was kind of lineup construction, as far as, you know, again, I get questions in the chat. Hey, does this lineup make sense? There's so much nuance and context left out of that. Are you playing cash? Are you playing GVP? Is it single entry versus 150 max? Is there 1,000 entries or 10,000 entries? I heard you say once, if there's an intelligent rationale to describe your lineup choices, it's a good lineup. Is that kind of the approach that you make? You know, you look at your exposures, you see some lineups, it kicks out. And if you can find a game script or a path that leads for that lineup to have success, is that what you determine a good lineup?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that like figuring out some sort of way to automate that is how I do that. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's easy to make a really good lineup by hand building. And then the step that a lot of people get stuck on is trying to like scale that, I think. So that's what it's all about. When you can justify all the choices you're making in your lineup, usually that means you have a pretty strong lineup. It's like you want some sort of path to victory that you can express, where it's like maybe your lineup in soccer, you're building it for like a 1-0 game in the showdown. So you like take goalie, you take a couple of defense, and maybe one guy that can score a goal or something like that. So that having that path is really important, and not just picking random good players.
So for MME, are you breaking down your exposure for different game outcomes? Like, are you taking, you know, 20% of your lineups as a 1-0 score, or, you know, 10% of your lineups would be an upset win by Brighton over Liverpool today or something like that? Or is it strictly just more of a statistical basis, saying the, you know, one deviation from the mean is this, and that's what we're going to do for our exposure?
Yeah, I think that there's a few different ways to approach it. Like, the ideal is you kind of figure out what everyone else is doing and try to do something else. So one thing I think a lot of people do that's a mistake in showdown is they'll just try to have a lineup that can score as many points as possible. But in showdown, it's like the winning score is going to vary a ton based on what the game script is. So like a 1-0 game is going to have a lot fewer points between everyone than like a 3-3 game or something like that. So just trying to maximize your points isn't necessarily going to get you super far. So that, I think one way you can do it is you can try to figure out what's the probability is 1-0, what's the probability is 0-0, 2-1, and then you could split up your lineups between those and kind of cover all your races instead of focusing on one game script.
And that, like you said, you've automated that process for yourself, because that'd be tough. In my head, I'm sitting here thinking, I try to do that, but that's probably why I don't get to 150 lineups, because that's a really intensive process that's important. But if you can automate it, like maybe you have, it cuts the time down and it probably increases your success.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just having some Excel skills to take the thoughts that you're thinking and put them down onto like a formula or something like that. That's really the key, is being able to like figure out what data points are important to you and how do you put them together to figure out how strong your lineup is.
Well, here's the big question, Alex. We got MLB, sounds like it's right around the corner. We know they're in the bubble down in Orlando with NBA. NFL's right around the corner. Is soccer going to be a part of your life moving forward, or what are you going to do when all these other sports come back?
Man, that's a good question. Like, I do enjoy playing, and the size of the prize pools does have a factor in that, because I mean, a few of those Bundesliga slates is like 13, like 11 games or something, and like 8K prize pool. It's like, I don't want to really spend all that time worrying about that. So I think it will depend, but I have the model and I can kind of plug in the numbers. So I hope to be able to continue at least putting out content for it, if nothing else.
You know, as that's especially as we get with baseball and NBA kicking off, and you know, first pitch and then tipping off here around relatively the same time. How are you planning on handling that? I know we're getting a lot of questions over at Elite as far as, you know, who's covering what sports and, you know, how's the coverage going to be. We're just going full bore, but for someone who's using the content, you know, how do they decide where to deploy their assets, right? Their dollars, their DK dollars.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think it depends, like, your level of experience, like having a strategy to put in the game that you believe is going to be a winning strategy. That's not easy to come up with, so it's probably easier to focus on one instead of splitting it between a lot of different sports. But there are so many tools out there to help you kind of learn new sports and not necessarily even have to be an expert on your own. So if you can leverage those and pick the right spots, like the tournaments that are a little bit easier to beat, then that's a great way to kind of build your bankroll.
How much are you evaluating that, Al? I mean, I know you're a bright guy. You're constantly looking at numbers and tweaking models and doing everything. I mean, are you looking at your results and then from your results choosing contest? Are you looking at, you know, your model and maybe the consistency with its output? What all goes into, you know, because we're going to have days and days and days back to back to back here where we're having basically sports from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, right? So, you know, how are you constantly updating your process to figure out the best way to optimize those dollars?
I think it's pretty consistent across every sport where that big, like, $10 or $15 or whatever, that's probably one of the softer contests. But, I mean, that's the softest one I can play. Like, there's beginner contests and ones under $5 that some of the sharper players aren't allowed to play. So those are always the ones I recommend if you're trying to build a bankroll and win money. And the other thing is focusing on sports that not everyone plays, like soccer, like Counter-Strike.
And, yeah, esports have been – the prize pools are huge.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about esports is everyone pretty much is a beginner. Like, Counter-Strike just got released on DraftKings a couple months ago. So if you can learn those, it just gives you more time to kind of play DFS, and that really helps you scale into being a bigger time player.
Well, what's it like being the biggest player in the world, man? Because it's got to be pretty awesome to wake up and be awesome every day, right? Like, you get up, what's your schedule? You have CSGO, you know, League of Legends, you have soccer coming up in the afternoons, then you're gonna have NBA, MLB coming up at night. Like, what's it like to wake up and be awesome though?
Man, it's a lot of DFS. So yeah, I do enjoy it, but sometimes it's a little over the top. Like, there's so many contests going on, and between all that, I'm trying to like improve my processes so that, you know, all the sharp players out there aren't going to take my money. So, like, trying to balance that is pretty tough, but I picked up some tricks over the years to kind of speed up the processes of everything I'm doing, and that's kind of what I'm leaning on because there are so many sports going on.
Are you married? Do you have a partner?
Not yet. I've been dating someone for 2 years, so we're thinking about it soon. But
what are we waiting on, man? What are we waiting
on?
Well,
the COVID kind of put a wrench to my plans here, so I'm waiting on the right opportunity for that in mind, I guess.
Have you planned it out? You know what you're going to do? I'm not trying to give away. No spoilers here.
I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, look, it's been awesome having you on here. Any questions you have for me, Alex? I mean, I've been in the soccer world for a while. Any questions you got for me?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of curious. EPL is ending pretty soon. After that, like, is the soccer scene like going to die down pretty quick, or are there other tournaments that are going to be of people's interest?
You know, that's a really good question, because right now, for those of us that have been around, we're enjoying, like we said, you know, you jumping in here and obviously helping us fill out these tournaments. We'd like people who aren't as sharp as you to fill out these tournaments as well, so we can take some of that cash. But, you know, we've been really stagnant for the last 2, 3, 4 years, and we've seen this little uptick here as it's been front and center of everybody's attention here. But once the EPL ends, we have basically a week or two off, and then we have Champions League, which is a really fun contest. I think you'd actually really enjoy those. A lot of goals being scored. These are now elimination games, so there's something on the line for every single game. Really love breaking down those slates because it's quality all across. It's the best teams in Europe. And then once that's over, we have a couple weeks and we're right back into the EPL season for next year, 2020-21. Issue being, NFL also comes back. So what happens to our contest sizes there? Do the tournaments shrink? Do the prize pool shrink? Do we go back to the same faces that we see every week? So the hope is that we continue to fill these soccer contests like we have been. DK continues, FanDuel continues to put some money in these contests because it is a fun sport. I mean, as someone who's relatively new to it, I hear the complaint that the scoring system is tough. There's too many stats. I mean, what are your thoughts on the scoring system for soccer? And can we simplify it?
I'd love to get your opinion on that too, because one of the things I was surprised by is like people don't seem very eager to adopt soccer, even though they're willing to try anything at this point, like Rocket League and League of Legends and stuff. But soccer, I mean, it has some logistical issues, like the lineups being out an hour before lock really makes it tough to build ahead of time. And the scoring system does seem to be kind of like arcane. Like FanDuel, they give so many points for like clearing the ball and block shots. And it's like, is that really worth all the points you're getting? And then on DraftKings, like dudes are getting 10 crosses a game, and that just adds up to a ton of fantasy points without really doing much. So I don't know what to make of it. I assume it's kind of like remnants of season-long soccer fantasy in the past. So what do you think they should do, if anything, to tighten it up?
You know, it's a good question because they've changed it a couple times. And FanDuel, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, what is your business plan, FanDuel? Because obviously it's tough to look at. You just pull up the screen. There's just stuff everywhere. They actually added some Bundesliga contests, which was great. They couldn't even go to the trouble to create a little widget and a little icon for a soccer ball. It was still a trophy, like everything else with the BUN. So even my subs were having a tough time finding it. I'm like, they're up there. Just look under bonus. And they couldn't. You know, it's these, and everyone's got to balance time and money and what the payoff is. But FanDuel, I feel like, has been less inclined to adapt to soccer and listen to the community. I think DK, to their credit, and I give them a lot of shit if you follow me on Twitter, about everything, especially not releasing pricing until like 9 hours before the contest kicks off. But they've added more showdowns. They've changed the contest size. What they haven't done is work on the scoring system. FanDuel scoring system, and I think there's also an issue with FanDuel and DK having a very different scoring system as far as growing the game. I don't know how we improve it. That's a long way of me saying I don't know exactly how we improve it. There used to be a bigger emphasis on crosses. Maybe we just go to large actions. Clean sheets, goals, assist, and crosses. And that's it. Maybe that simplifies it. I know they added the completed passes to constantly have scoring and constantly update. That's okay. But I don't know if it overcomplicates things. You know, I mean, there's just a lot going on. It's a lot to adopt. But then I see sports like NASCAR going absolutely bonkers and esports coming online and huge contests. I don't understand why soccer can't get this figured out. And it could be the time of day, like it kicks off, like you were talking about earlier, Alex. But then I see KBO doing awesome at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I don't know, man. I've said a million different things and said nothing at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, KBO has been really surprising. It's so unusual because you think if most of the players are in the U.S., it's like at the worst possible time. And you can't build lineups ahead of time. It's like the same as soccer where they come out an hour ahead of time. So that is quite the perplexing.
Have you got into Aussie rules football?
I haven't yet, but it sounds fun, man. Have you played?
I haven't, but we got a guy, Dan Siggs, who does an awesome job breaking it down. He's stayed up, watched these games, dove into the numbers, and has been kicking out some killer results there. So I think I have to start.
That's epic. Yeah, I mean, anytime there's a new sport, especially one that locks at 4 a.m., yeah, I think it's going to be pretty soft.
How about college football? Do you play much college football?
That one, I've tried a couple of seasons, but it's like a lot of it's just kind of keeping up with the news and like all the new players every year and the rotating teams each slate, where Like, you never know who's going to be on the main slate each week. So I feel like that one is any college sport. There's just so much turnover that is hard to really to play unless you're a super fan. So I'm a lot more bullish on betting in those sports because you just don't know how, you don't have to know as much about it to be able to compete.
You know, that was my last question I was going to ask here, and not that this is the last question of the pod, but do you bet often? Do you bet on these sports? You bet on soccer, football? You know, is that, do you bet on sports?
I'm getting into it. Like, they just released the first legal sports book in Illinois online, so I've been placing some bets on there. There's certain markets where I feel like all the stuff I've done for DFS would already like be applicable, like player props and stuff. But I haven't really tried to handicap many sports because I just don't feel like it's essential for DFS. So that's gonna be something I'm the next challenge for. Like, what should the over under be? Like, what should the money line be? Because at the end of the day, that's kind of how you determine who knows the most about the sport is who can figure those out.
Yeah, it's funny. We have a ton of sharp guys over on our website who are 100% math based, and it's a part of my process, but I'm, you know, I see what my eyes see, right? And I'm trying to pick winners here, which is extremely hard to do. But it, you know, Vegas is obviously a part of the daily fantasy breakdown. So it's interesting to hear, maybe you'll start doing it more, like you said, but where do you find the bandwidth with how much daily fantasy you're playing?
Well, that's the thing is, like, for daily fantasy, like, the sports books are kind of like a jumping off point. So it's like, you don't have to know as much about the sport to be able to play, because you can take their like predictions and plug them in. But then the next step is making those predictions yourself. So that's definitely something I'm excited for.
What do you think happens to daily fantasy here moving forward as sports betting is more widely legalized and becomes bigger and bigger? You know, certainly I think there's room for both in the landscape, but are we looking at a period of stagnation, even regressing a little bit? What do you think of the future of daily fantasy?
Well, I think that sports betting is much easier to play, so it's definitely going to take off in a way fantasy hasn't. My big criticism of daily fantasy is just that it takes a long time to build a lineup and a lot of thought. So it's much easier to place a sports bet, so the barrier to entry is so much lower. But that being said, I mean, you look at poker versus blackjack. People prefer poker. A lot of people prefer poker. Like, they might not be winners, but there is the idea that if you're competing against other people, you have a much better chance to win than if you're competing against like a business. So I do think that like peer-to-peer aspect of daily fantasy is something that will continue. And I think there might be sports betting that kind of involves that peer-to-peer contest where maybe you pick sides of a slate of games and then you get scored for fantasy based on that. So I think there's some crossover.
Wow. My friend and I are actually talking about something very similar to that right now. We're actually searching for a good source for that. And I had another friend who created a game similar to that. I definitely think there's a future in that, probably in the not too distant future here, maybe from one of these big sites who maybe acquires a group who's already in the process of doing that. You know, Alex, we were talking earlier about why soccer hasn't really taken off as much as it has. It's tiny. It's tiny in Europe and in South America as far as a daily fantasy perspective. And I think a piece of it is the ease and just the familiarity, because it's legal there, of going to the local pub or the local book and putting a couple pounds down on, you know, Newcastle to win versus trying to build, you know, an 8-person lineup and correlate goals and assists and clean sheets and worry about all that. You know, is that, it certainly should be bigger over in Europe and across the world, but it's not. I mean, I'm guessing that's a piece of it.
Definitely. And I think that DFS could catch on in Europe because it has that element of being able to put in a little bit of money for big payout that sports betting typically doesn't have. So I think there are a lot of advantages to DFS. But I can see, I mean, like, from the perspective of these sites, they're probably looking at Europe and being like, the market is already tapped out with sports betting. So we just can't, like, it's probably harder for them to get like a foothold than in the US.
Well, what do you do for fun, man? I mean, you probably have, what, like 9-10 minutes a day where you're not working. What do you do for fun?
Well, one of my big hobbies is ping pong. I'll go down to the local club and play, but It's closed due to COVID, so I have zero hobbies right now.
Just literally all work.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're over at Osmo DFS. Is it osmodfs.com?
Osmo.com. And Osmo.com. Osmo DFS is my Twitter handle.
That's AwesomoDFS on Twitter. Like I said, he's one of the best Twitter follows that I have. You know, I've followed 600-700 people and always crack up when Alex posts things. Is that a conscious change you made? I don't know. I'm not saying it was bad before, but I feel like in the last year or so, you've just been cracking me up, dude.
Thanks, man. I try really hard, probably too hard, to come up with something funny to say on Twitter. And I guess when you're as immersed in sports as all of us DFS players are, it's like there's always something to talk about.
Definitely. And I've recently got rid of – I shed a few people I was following, and my timeline is cleaned up and much more positive. Don't be afraid to mute people. Don't be afraid to unfollow people. Make Twitter what you'd like it to be. It is your timeline. Enjoy it here. Osmo, you will continue to be a part of my timeline, and I really appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you. It's fun to talk some soccer, man.
Absolutely. Look forward to you jumping out and going to another sport so I can get back to the winning ways here, but congratulations on all your success thus far.
Thanks, man. I like the stuff you're doing here, so looking forward to hearing more of your podcasts.
There you go. He's Osmo at Osmo DFS, and check out his work over at Osmo.com. Alex Baker, everybody.